Chapter 11. The car came over into the wrong lane and stopped alongside me. It was an old Chevy Caprice police cruiser painted up in the Carter County Sheriff's Department colors. The woman behind the wheel had an unruly mass of dark hair, somewhere between wavy and curly, tied back in an approximate ponytail. Her face was pale and flawless. She was low in the seat, which meant either she was short or the seat was caved in by long years of use. I decided the seat must be caved in because her arms looked long and the set of her shoulders didn't suggest a short person. I pegged her at somewhere in her middle 30s, old enough to show some mileage, young enough to still find some amusement in the world. She was smiling slightly, and the smile was reaching her eyes, which were big and dark and liquid, and seemed to have some kind of a glow in them, although that might have been a reflection from the Chevy's instrument panel. She wound down her window and looked straight at me, first my face, then a careful up-and-down, side-to-side appraisal, all the way from my shoes to my hair, with nothing but frankness in her gaze. I stepped in closer to give her a better look, and to take a better look. She was more than flawless. She was spectacular. She had a revolver in a holster on her right hip, and next to it was a shotgun stuffed muzzle down in a scabbard mounted between the seats. There was a big radio slung under the dash on the passenger side, and the microphone on a curly wire in a clip near the steering wheel. The car was old and worn, almost certainly bought second-hand from a richer municipality. She said,
"You're the guy Pellegrino brought in."
Her voice was quiet but clear, warm but not soft, and her accent sounded local. I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." She said,
"You're Reacher, right?"
I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." She said,
"I'm Elizabeth Devereaux. I'm the sheriff here."
I said, "I'm very pleased to meet you." She paused a beat and said,
"Did you eat dinner yet?"
I nodded. "But not dessert," I said. "As a matter of fact, I'm heading back to the diner for pie right now."
"Do you usually take a walk between courses?"
I was waiting out the hotel people. They didn't seem in much of a hurry.
"Is that where you're staying tonight? The hotel?"
"I'm hoping to."
"You're not staying with the friend you came to find?"
"I haven't found him yet." She nodded in turn.
"I need to talk to you," she said. "Find me in the diner. 5 minutes, okay?"
There was authority but no menace in her voice, no agenda, just the kind of easy command I guessed came from being first a sheriff's daughter and then a sheriff herself. "Okay," I said. "5 minutes." She wound up her window again, and reversed away and turned around, in a slower version of the same maneuver the two guys in the truck had used. She switched her headlights back on and drove away. I saw her brake lights flare red, and she turned into Main Street. I followed on foot, in the weeds, between the pavement and the ditch. I got to the diner well inside the 5 minutes I had been given, and found Elizabeth Devereaux's cruiser parked at the curb outside. She herself was at the same table I had used. The old couple from the hotel had finally decamped. The place was empty, apart from Devereaux and the waitress. I went in, and Devereaux said nothing specific, but used one foot under the table to shove the facing chair out a little. An invitation. Almost a command. The waitress got the message. She didn't try to seat me elsewhere. Clearly, Devereaux had already ordered. I asked the waitress for a slice of her best pie and another cup of coffee. She went through to the kitchen, and silence claimed the room. Up close and personal, I was prepared to concede that Elizabeth Devereaux was a seriously good-looking woman. Truly beautiful. Out of the car, she was relatively tall, and her hair was amazing. There must have been 5 pounds of it in her ponytail alone. She had all the right parts and all the right proportions. She looked great in her uniform. But then, I liked women in uniform, possibly because I had known very few of the other kind. But best of all was her mouth, and her eyes. Together they put a kind of wry, amused animation into her face, as if whatever happened to her, she would stay cool and calm and collected through it all, and then she would find some quality in it to make her smile. There was still light in her eyes, not just a reflection from the Caprice's speedometer. She said,
"Pellegrino told me you've been in the army."
I paused a beat. Undercover work is all about lying, and I hadn't minded lying to Pellegrino, but for some unknown reason I found myself not wanting to lie to Devereaux. So I said, "6 weeks ago I was in the army," which was technically true.
"What branch?"
"I was with an outfit called the 110th, mostly," I said.
"Also true. Infantry?"
"It was a special unit. Combined operations, basically."
"Which was true, technically. Who's your local friend?"
"A guy called Hayter," I said. "An outright invention." Devereaux said,
"He must have been infantry. Kellum is all infantry."
I nodded. "The 75th Ranger Regiment," I said.
"Was he an instructor?"
she asked. "Yes," I said. She nodded.
"They're the only ones who are here long enough to want to stick around afterward."
I said nothing. She said,
"I've never heard of him."
"Then maybe he moved on again."
"When might he have done that?"
"I'm not sure. How long have you been sheriff?"
2 years, she said. "Long enough to get to know the locals, anyway."
"Pellegrino said you'd been here all your life. I mean, as far as getting to know the locals is concerned."
"Not true," she said. "I haven't been here all my life. I was here as a kid, and I'm here now, but there were years in between."
There was something wistful about her tone.
"There were years in between."
I asked her, "How did you spend those years?"
"I had a rich uncle," she said. "I toured the world at his expense."
And at that point, I suspected I was in trouble. At that point, I suspected my mission was about to fail, because I had heard that answer before.